Today's Teisho is on Case 93 in the Book of Serenity, Lu Zhu's Not Understanding. Introduction. A precious gem hits a magpie. A rat bites a gold piece. They don't know they are treasures and can't put them to use. Is there anyone who suddenly notices the jewel hidden in his clothes? Lu Zhu asked Nan Chuan, the wish-fulfilling jewel, people don't know. It is personally obtained from the mind of realization of thusness. What is the mind? Nan Chuan said, that in me which comes and goes with you is it. Lu Zhu said, what about that which doesn't come and go? Nan Chuan said, it's also the mind. Lu Zhu said, what is the jewel? Nan Chuan called him by name. Lu Zhu responded, yes. Nan Chuan said, go. You don't understand my words. Distinguishing right and wrong, clarifying gain and loss, responding to it in the mind, pointing to it in the palm. Coming and going, not coming and going, it's just this. Both are the mind. A universal monarch rewards it to those who have merit. The Emperor of Yellow got it from Wang Zhang, turning the pivotal works, capably skilled, a clear-eyed mendicant has no crudity. So Lu Zhu asked Nan Chuan, there is a wish-fulfilling gem, a wish-fulfilling jewel that people don't know about. It is personally obtained from the mind, like a gold mine, a realization of thusness. This term, wish-fulfilling gem or wish-fulfilling jewel, is a standard term from Buddhist tradition. You'll see it in Tibetan Buddhism and also in Chinese Buddhism, wish-fulfilling. This world, when it's experienced in the proper way, is like a wish-fulfilling gem. In Indian mythology, there's this idea of a magical gem that you find. And when you find this gem, you can hold it in your hand and it will produce what you want. So the closest thing in Western tradition is Aladdin's lamp. You rub the lamp and the genie appears and grants you three wishes. The wish-fulfilling gem is a little bit like that. It's a magical gem, magical stone. You hold it in your hand, what you want will come true. So it's a very, very powerful gem. So Lu Zhu asked Nan Chuan, the famous wish-fulfilling gem, people don't know. It is personally obtained from the mind of realization of thusness. So the real wish-fulfilling gem is obtained from like a mind. It's deep in the mind of the realization of thusness. And in other words, this is again sort of standard Buddhism. The state of mind in which people are thought to be able to experience reality is sometimes described as thusness, tathagata, or tathata. Tathagata means thus come. It's a pure presence, okay? Pure presence. So the wish-fulfilling gem that people speak of, the magical wish-fulfilling gem, people don't know it, but it's obtained in the moment in which we enter thusness, pure presence in the moment, without gain and loss, right and wrong. Where is that mind? Anyway, Where is it? Nanchuan said, that in me which comes and goes with you is it. There's something inside me that meets you here in this moment, and that's it. There's something inside me that meets you here in this moment. That's the famous, the secret mind where the jewel comes from. So then Luzhu says, what about that which doesn't come and go with me, with you? And Nanchuan says, that's also the mind. And then Luzhu said, what about the what's the jewel? Nanchuan called him by name. Luzhu responded, yes. So Nanchuan said, Luzhu. Luzhu said, yes. Nanchuan said, go. You don't understand my words. Today is the first day of our beautiful October. Oh, they're all the same. They're all wonderful. They're all wonderful. Right? It could be August. It's hot enough almost to be August. It's probably 70 degrees out today. But it's beautiful, right? We've had beautiful weather for a week. And it rained yesterday, and here we are, and trees are turning. It's just beautiful to be here. And I must say that I'm so glad that all of you can make it. It's just wonderful to practice with each of you. And I'm really thrilled that you could be here. This is such a precious opportunity. You know, we all probably had to make some serious adjustments in our lives to get here. Poor Gary just got off a plane and is on another time zone altogether, and I know how difficult that is. That must be a very, very difficult. And I know that Yurio also did that at one time. He came to a session, and I remember looking over at him as he was eating, and he was just, his face was just drooping down, getting closer and closer to the bowls, right? I think he was just about to doze off. So I know how difficult that is. And some of you had many responsibilities that you had to put aside to come here. Work responsibilities, or school. And I know how difficult that is, because I myself had to do the same thing. It was like when I went in on Tuesday morning, my idea was just to teach my class and then get out and go to the store and start finishing the shopping for the session. But of course, that was not to be. You know, millions of unexpected things happened. Well, not really millions, but it felt like millions. And suddenly I was getting later and later in the day, and I couldn't really escape. And I just finally left and jumped in my car and drove down here. So maybe it's been like that for you too, where you just had to escape and come here. But I'm so glad you're here. It's wonderful. It's very precious. You know, that in life, it's unusual to have this opportunity. And most people, some people really want this, but they don't know it. And they go through much of their lives until they realize it. And sometimes they realize it very late in life, or they know something's missing, but they never know what. There's a young man who's been coming to sit on Monday and Friday nights this year. And I can't remember his name right now, because he's just a little too new. I'm not a quick study for names and faces. And the truth is, over the years, thousands of people have come in to sit in our, probably has been in the last 12 years, probably maybe 1,000 anyway, have come in to sit in our little zendo. And most of them don't stay. So in a way, I've gotten kind of detached about learning people's names, because they come and they go a lot of the time. But this person seems to me to be somebody who's going to stay for a while. And he's been coming quite faithfully every time, every week. And he wanted to talk to me after the sit, think it was on Monday night, and he said, you know, this is the most amazing thing for me. My sister asked me, why am I sitting so much? Why am I, and, you know, why am I doing so much meditation? And she said, but, or he said, but, you know, he said, for me, it's like, I feel like I've been down in the water all my life, and suddenly when I started to meditate, I feel like I'm swimming up to the surface and I can take a breath of clean, fresh air. He said, I don't know. He really said that. It was just like, it was wonderful. I mean, and I said, well, you know, I know exactly what you're talking about, because it was like that for me too. I'll never forget one of my first sesshins. We used to have sesshin in our sangha in Seattle, a place called the Hood Canal. It's really not a canal, it's a channel. It's a natural, natural body of water in the Puget Sound area. And there was I think it was a Baptist summer camp. And they were liberal Baptists, and they allowed us to use their summer camp for our sesshin. And eventually they stopped doing that because of some internal disagreements about it. But for a long time, for a number of years, we used their summer camp. And it was a beautiful place. It was right on the water. But to get there, we had to take ferries, boats. From Seattle, you had to take a ferry over to the island and we would ride a car from there. And I was on the ferry and I was sitting next to this woman. Her name was Abby Terrace. And she was talking to somebody else who was going to the sesshin, and I overheard her say, you know, I just feel like I've been looking all my life for this. I've been thirsty all my life, and finally I've had like cool, clear water to drink. Just very similar to what that young man said in the Zendo the other day. And it's so true. It's like if you're the kind of person who needs that, who wants that, you might go through your whole life and never be able to find that cold water or that clear air, right? You just keep looking, but it's so lucky to be able to find it, you know, to be able to suddenly sit down on the cushion and body and mind drop away, and you're in the pure presence of the moment. And that's just so precious, so precious. And it's also unusual for people to have opportunities in terms of basic life opportunities. In other words, for some reason, you're all able to arrange to come here at this time. None of you are seriously ill. You know, you have personal freedom to do this. All of this is just tremendously rare and very precious. You know, it's just quite unusual also to have a place like this, which is so appropriate for our practice, and affordable, and people here are happy to have us come. I mean, this is like all the forces line up for this to happen. And when it happens, it's possible, if you're not too sensitive, to just say, oh boy, another sesshin, you know, here we go again. But if you think about it, it's really quite extraordinary that this is even possible. And so here we are at this precious event, and I'm so glad you're here. And it's really quite extraordinary that we don't know how long we're going to be alive. We don't know how long we're going to be able to do this, and so on. You know, lots of circumstances in your life might change, but here you are now. Please, I'm sure you have the right spirit, or you wouldn't be here. But please, you know, pause for a moment and just, you know, reflect or realize, you know, how amazing and precious it is to be able to do this beautiful chant, this beautiful Zen. So here we are, beautiful Sashin, first day, and I hope you had a good sleep last night. I myself really didn't have a very good sleep, I have to tell you. I had to get up really early yesterday to get everything ready for Sashin, and I was really racing around. I almost was late for my class, which I never do. I pride myself on always being, you know, in class on time or ahead of my class students, you know. I've been teaching for almost 30 years and I don't think I've ever been late. I'm serious. I really like to be punctual. Anyway, I almost was late for my class. I really had to drive like a madman to get to Rutgers. And, you know, I got to my class and very busy, very hectic, and then I had to go to a couple stores. I had to go and buy some miso, which I promptly left at my house. You know, this is like the second time I've done this. One time, Yurio was kind enough to bring the miso that I'd left to buy some miso. I bought a whole bunch of miso, and I put it in the refrigerator, and then I thought, okay, before I go, I'll put it in the car. And of course, it's the one thing I didn't take. So anyway, by the time last night came around, 9 o'clock, I was rather tired. I had lunch, fortunately, but that was quite a ways before when we started sitting, and I was pretty tired. The sit was another sleepy sit for me, and I went to bed thinking, okay, I'm going to have a nice sleep. So I lay down in my bed and I slept for about 2 hours, maybe an hour and a half. And then I was awakened by smoke alarm. Well, that's what it sounded like, right? It was like, what the heck, you know? And it wouldn't go away. It was just like this. And, you know, I sort of drifted up into the consciousness, and I thought, what the heck is smoke alarm? You know, and then I realized it wasn't a smoke alarm. What the heck is it? And then it's a cricket, you know? There was a cricket under my bed. and he wasn't just going chirp, chirp, you know? He was going chirp, chirp, for a long time. So I thought, at first I thought, well, I'll just go back to sleep. But it was just so obnoxious, right? And then got up and I turned on the light and I began to look for the cricket, you know, which is an incredibly difficult. Several years ago we had Sashin here. I think it was a June Sashin. But there was a cricket in the fireplace. And and he was there for days, right? And really, you know, you should be able to sit with any sound, but it's quite piercing. You know, actually, when they're in the distance, they're beautiful, right? And you hear them, you think, oh, beautiful crickets. You know? But this one cricket was in the fireplace, and he was, you know, he would just be chirp, chirp, you know, really loud. It didn't even sound, it wasn't pleasant. It was like somebody hitting a piece of steel or something over and over again. And I actually found it. You know, but it took me days to find him. The sound sounded huge, you know. This morning there was a cricket, I don't know if you noticed, but going, as we were reciting the sutras, he came out to join us in sutra recitation. And he walked all across, he walked toward Jackie's cushion and then Ishin and then back over to Eric and then he went towards Yvette and then he walked around my cushion and he came around behind Intia's, yeah. And then he started coming back to me, and I had a tissue paper, and after we recited the sutras, I just put it on top of him and took him out on the door, took him outside. But he was big, and so I was expecting this cricket who was making this huge noise that sounded like somebody hammering metal, you know, to be this giant cricket in the front. And he's tiny, teeny weeny. So last night, there's this cricket under my bed, and he wasn't just going chirp, chirp, he was going, so, and I thought, oh, I'm so tired, you know. So I turned on the lights, and I started looking for the cricket, you know, and I had to be quiet, because I didn't hope I didn't disturb anybody, but I'm looking for this cricket, and of course, I didn't find it, right? Because, you know, if you look over here, he goes over there. If you look over there, he goes over here, you know, so... and you can't see him because he's too small, or you know. So then I lay back down, and I just, you know, I thought, oh man, really, yeah, what luck, what, man, you know. So from about, I don't know, 1 o'clock to about 2:30 or something, I just listened to the cricket, you know. And it was really impossible to go to sleep, and I was sort of pissed off about it at first, and then you know. It is true. If you just say, okay, I'm not going to sleep. I'm not going to get to sleep. I'm not going to find the cricket. You know, I might as well be in this moment. I swear to you, it becomes really. I'm not going to say pleasant. You know? I'm not gonna say pleasant. A better word for it would be exciting. Exciting. You know, because as I began to listen to the cricket in my samadhi mind, you know, instead of my small mind, which is going, I've got to get to sleep. You know, after listening to the cricket in my small mind for a while and getting pissed off, I thought, well, what, this is getting me nowhere. I can't find the cricket. And so I might as well try to go into samadhi mind. So I started watching my breath and so on. As I was lying in bed, and it became very exciting to listen to the cricket. It was like the spirit of cricket was in me. Yeah, it was like the spirit of cricket was in me, or the whole. It was like the spirit of fall was in me, and I felt like the whole world was in me. You know, it's like everything is unfolding now in this voice of the cricket. Obnoxious as it is, right? But it's a whole universe going, and you could hate it, or you can become one with it. But if you become one with it, it's not always pleasant, but it's tremendously exciting. I was really excited. I felt the way I felt like, you know, when you are on a trip. When I was a little kid, you know, we didn't travel that much. But when we would travel, it was tremendously exciting. You just never knew what was going to happen. And you're moving across the earth, and it's sort of an adventure because you're in strange places. And it's really, you know, it's just exciting. It was like that listening to that cricket last night. You know, that's how it was. And... you know, it has nothing to do with, you know, we spend so much of our lives trying to make life be the way we want, right? And often it just doesn't work that way. Life just doesn't work that way. And when things are not going well, what we often try to do is to tell some kind of a story that will make sense, you know. So, you know, when this cricket was driving me nuts last night, you know, one of the things that did pop into my mind was, you know, why now, the first day of session, you know, I'm going to be tired tomorrow, blah, blah, blah. Why now, right? And you could also think, this is happening to me. This must be karmic retribution, right? For something I've done. But what? You know? And you can lie there and think, well, you know, maybe I shouldn't have done that. Maybe it's that. Maybe it's that. Well, you know, maybe I'm just an innocent victim. You know, an innocent victim. You know, fish. You know? All of this is like insane, right? Because really, you can explain events any way you like. Right? But they're all, none of the explanations are real. that none of them really, I mean, that none of them really solve your problem. It doesn't matter whether it's a big issue or a little issue. You know, if you say, why is this happening to me? There's really no explanation that is going to solve your problem. But we look for an explanation. We want things to make sense, or we keep trying to interpret. You know, when I was in the ninth grade, I was a student of a woman, a lovely woman named Mrs. Brown. Mrs. Brown was my English teacher in the ninth grade. And I had not really been very interested in English until I took Mrs. Brown's course. And she was something else, you know. In the classroom, we had vocabulary words up on the wall. And they were in alphabetical order, and they were strange words that none of us knew, like assiduity, acumen. They were in alpha order, and so on. And each week we had to learn. There were these big words on the side of the wall. We had like 10 words each week that we had to use in sentences. And she made us read these novels and write papers on the novels in which we interpreted the novels. And if she liked our paper, she would point to a word up on the wall and she'd say, your paper has acumen, which means good insight. She said, your paper has acumen because you applied yourself with assiduity. See? So she was teaching all the time. She was totally dedicated. And many people would get their papers back and cry because she was, you know, she'd cover them with red ink and so on. But she taught me how to interpret books. So when you read a book, you don't just read about the story and say, well, here's what happened in the story. You say, here's why it happened. See? So, you know, one of the books we had to read was called The Bridge of San Luis Rey. And it's about people who are going on a pilgrimage across a bridge in Peru, and the bridge gives way and they're killed. And a monk is trying to find out why this happened. And he says, what were the intentions of God here? Why did these people die instead of somebody else? And why at this moment? Trying to figure it out. And we had to read this book, and we were doing the same thing. We were trying to figure out, you know, what this book was all about. And the writer was a man named Thornton Wilder. You don't meet many people named Thornton. But Thornton Wilder was a very popular writer in America about 50 years ago, 60 years ago. And when I was in high school, 40 years ago, a little less, 35 years ago, he was still very popular, and we would write themes, and we'd say, you know, this happens, and then this happens, and this happens, and this shows what the author wants us to understand. See, when somebody goes into a room in a story, they don't go in for no reason. It's supposed to point something out, right? If somebody comes, says hello in a story, it's not just an accident, it means something. So I really learned how to interpret, and I got very good at it, you know. You could throw me any novel, and I would look at the novel and say, here are the symbols, here's the key events, and here's what they mean, right? And when we, even if you didn't like English, and even if you didn't have a teacher like Mrs. Brown, we all sort of grow up looking at life this way, trying to interpret it and make a story out of it that makes sense. So, you know, you might have something happen to you, and you might say, well, what was life trying to teach me about this? Or what was God trying to tell me? Or something like that. And you might say, well, I was supposed to learn this lesson, or I'm being tested, or I'm being rewarded, or whatever you want to say. But the truth is, if your heart isn't at rest, if your mind isn't calm and your body isn't at ease, no story you tell is going to solve your problem. In fact, the desire to tell a story or to make sense of something is the problem. So it is the problem. The Zen path is not about interpreting or understanding anything. Our goal is not to understand anything. And this is rather difficult because of the way we're conditioned, right? We've been raised to look for a message, purpose, point, direction. Now, all of these things are sort of like hardwired into human consciousness. But if you think about it, you know, the universe is infinite in that direction, and it's infinite in that direction. You know, actually, there was probably a Big Bang, but you know, now they say there was a Big Bang before the Big Bang. And in fact, they think that there's an infinite number of Big Bangs, and that universes blossom, and then out of universes come of other universes. And it's just like they keep exploding into universes. So it's infinite in one direction, infinite in another direction. And you say, well, why is this being happening? Humans have a desire to put things in a story, some kind of a myth, some kind of a story. And they do this because they're afraid or unhappy or they've been injured or, you know, whatever reason. And they've been trained to do this too and rewarded for doing it. But the truth is, it doesn't solve your problem, because actually no story can explain this beautiful world. There's no story that's adequate to this beautiful moment. See? So the Zen path is different from almost any other path that I know, because we don't, we're not interested in explaining or understanding or coming to terms with or accounting for or getting right with. All of those are just those are not, those are limited views, yeah? So what makes our path so unusual is that we're not going to understand, we're just going to be with the moment. See, just be with the moment. And it's far more beautiful than anything we could say about it. Even when there's a cricket under your bed who won't let you sleep, yeah? It's really quite a wonderful world. In fact, it's thrilling, it's exciting. So today, you know, you've come here and to practice the way of Chan, of Zen. And you have a beautiful intention, and you have all been practicing faithfully. All you have to do is sit, and everything will take care of itself. You know, if you have any thoughts about making progress or answering the koan or anything like that, please realize that that's your small self speaking. That, you know, we have these koans, these things we call koans, but, you know, basically they're just a skillful means for people to realize that their life is bigger than our expectations. And they're just like a clever way of getting, they're like, you know, in a way you could think of koans like this. You know, when a baby is crying, you don't come up to the baby and say, hey, you shouldn't cry, you know, don't cry. There's nothing to cry about, it doesn't work. You know? So if the baby's crying, you come up and you go, hey, look at this, you want to see a duck? You know, and you make your fingers go quack, 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 quack. Or you make a funny face, or you have the shiny paper, you show you all the shiny paper. And koan's kind of like that. Yeah? It says, hey, want to answer a puzzle? You know? Yeah, definitely. Because I'm a human, right? I'll get it. Here it is. You know, the puzzle is, today's puzzle is, what is, you know, where's the wish, where is that wish fulfilling gem we've been hearing about? Anton says, that in me which comes and goes with you. I know it. I've got the answer to this. And then Lujo says, well, but what about it if it doesn't come and go? Anchon says, it's also mine. Lujo says, what's the jewel? And Anchon says, calls him by name, and Lujo says, yes. And Anchon says, go, you don't understand my words. Now, you don't understand my words. What does that mean? Does it mean you haven't got it, or does it mean you've got it? Well, if the point is not understanding, then it's a great compliment, right? Just when somebody calls your name and you say yes, this is just like seeing your face in the mirror. See, it's seeing your face in the mirror, touching your own arm with the other hand. You know, it's all one life. There's nothing to be explained, and that it's the pure presence of the moment that is our liberation. And it's just so wonderful. So being human, I guess we have to struggle for that, right? Because we have created so many illusions. When we come here, we have so many illusions, so many thoughts and ideas, so many plans, so many dreams. You know, and so you sit on the cushion for day one, and it's just like brushing the dust off your clothes. You know, there's just be so much for those dreams, so much for those ideas, so much for those. Just keep brushing, you know, just keep brushing the dust off your clothes, and by the end of today, you know, your mind is going to be, if it's not already. Your mind is going to be so sweet and clear. It's going to be like coming up through the water and surfacing and taking a beautiful breath. And like, so beautiful. And it might happen now, might have happened this morning, might not happen till tomorrow. It just depends on, you know, how much of a habit we've made out of being nervous and fearful. And everything in our society, everything in our world encourages us to be frightened, nervous, fearful, possessive, and so on. And this is just a simple conditioning. And we're always made to feel that we don't have it, we'll never get it, only a few people have the answer, blah, blah, blah. You know, only a few people really know what's what, and this is all like an illusion. You know, everything is right here. All the answers to all the koans are right here in the moment, and all you have to do is just keep coming back to the moment, coming back to the moment. There's a part of you that might say, "Well, my legs are hurting. This is not the moment I wanted." Well, there's a cricket under the bed, and this is not the moment I wanted. But you know, if you stay with the moment, it becomes thrilling, because it's the universe unfolding through your body. It's just, that is really splendid, right? Of course, experiencing this takes a long time. You have to cultivate the mind of pure presence, Tathagata. Right? The Buddha was actually called Tathagata. Because when people were in his presence, they felt so strongly just the purity of the present moment. And so they actually called him presentness. The Buddha was called presentness, pure presentness. To get to that pure presentness takes a little work for most of us. We have to clear away the obstacles. But when we're there, it's a beautiful world. It's a beautiful world. And we're never not there. We just imagine that we're not. So today, probably, you're going to be doing some cleaning, right? Just basic cleaning. And every time you feel confused, every time you're in pain, every time you're feeling emotional highs and lows, And just come down to the moment. Just come back to your breath. Just come back to your koan. And when coming back to the koan is just coming back to the moment. All the koan is asking you to do is look at some aspect of the moment. And you may at first say, I hate it, I hate it. Where is that damn cricket? You know, where is that damn cricket? But at some point, you know, you don't care. It's just, I'm the cricket. You know? I'm the cricket. I'm the cricket. You know? Thank God I didn't squash him. Because you know? He's me. My true self. Really and truly. Really and truly. So, I'm so happy you're here. All the planets, all the stars, whatever, all line up, and here we are. How wonderful. And now we can feast. We can drink from this clean water. We can feast on this pure rice. It's just heaven itself. So if it's not quite like that yet, then just keep coming back to this beautiful moment that, you know, you won't be disappointed. You I promise. It's a wish-fulfilling gem. This world is our wish-fulfilling gem. A precious gem hits a magpie. Magpie is a symbol of distracted mind. A rat bites a gold piece. They don't know they're treasures. They can't put them to use. Is there anyone who suddenly notices the jewel hidden in his clothes? Lu Zhu asked Nanchuan, the wish, the famous wish-fulfilling gem. People don't know it. It comes from the realization of thusness. Where is thusness? Thusness is in me. It's the thing in me which comes and goes with you. What about if it doesn't come and go? That's thusness too. What is the jewel? What is the jewel? Nanchuan called him by name. Lu Zhu. Lu Zhu said, yes. See, that's the moment. Yes. Whatever this moment is, yes. 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 Nanchuan said, go. You don't understand my words. Good. You're not thinking. You're not understanding. Bigger than understanding. Distinguishing right and wrong, clarifying gain and loss, responding to it in the mind, pointing to it in the palm, coming and going, not coming and going. It's just this. Both are the wish fulfillment. Both are thusness. A universal monarch rewards it to those who have merit. The emperor of yellow got it from Wang Yan. Turning the pivotal works, capably skilled, a clear-eyed monk has no crudity. Huh? Just be, just stay with the moment. It's like a, beautiful, like cleaning the dust off the mirror, cleaning the dust off the mirror, and to no crudity, and just pure, clean, fresh air, beautiful, clear, delicious water, cold mountain water. That's this moment. So now let's enjoy.